You're listening to The Daily Digestionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
Comrades, this is your host of the Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and I'm excited to be back with another edition of the show. I'm joined today by Dr. Matthew Johnson again, and we've got a couple of different things to talk about, specifically Johnson's Law, as we've talked about. The farther something is away from America, and the less we know about it, the more the system can get away with lying. So, first of all, Dr. Johnson, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing great. You know, I must not have much of a life if I'm, you know, here with you day after day.
Well, we're here for the sake of the people. Everything is a ministry of truth in one way and more than one way. And kicking off truth to be able to talk about, you know, as we've discussed on the show a lot, the issue of Syria. And it's come out that Gary Johnson was asked, bless his heart, I almost feel like giving him a hard time is like making fun of a special ed kid. He didn't know what the city of Aleppo was. Of course, as we know, Syrian Arab Army Forces, Hezbollah, and Russian Air Force has made huge gains in Aleppo to kind of cut off ISIS and these other rebel groups that are just ISIS by another name. And he was asked about Aleppo, and he had no idea what Aleppo was. He probably thought it was a new dank strand of weed, because the only thing he seems to have in common with the traditional libertarians is his drug stance, as we were talking about just yesterday. So what do you think about a presidential contender who in some polls is up to 10% not knowing about a city that's been in the headlines for 5 years now when it comes to the Syrian civil war, and not really understanding anything about Syria, it seems?
Well, actually, I was under the impression that he just didn't know what was going on there at the moment. You're saying he never heard of it at all, that it could have been just, you know, a new brand of fruit that came out. He just never heard of the place?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not exactly sure on that, but he hasn't talked about foreign policy nearly at all, which, of course, was really has historically been the crux of libertarians. Especially with reducing our footprint and having a strong foreign policy that's based on peace. But he really hasn't commented. I haven't seen anything really at all him talking about Syria or Eastern Europe or things like that. So I'm not sure. He might not have heard of it, or he might just not know what's going on the ground. But what do you think about him not knowing about one of the most volatile regions on the planet that has a huge impact on American homeland security and European homeland security, him not knowing about it?
He's in good company. None of the major presidential contenders have any idea what's happening there. Have no conceptual tools to analyze it. Whoever takes office, especially if it's Hillary Clinton, is going to be, you know, under orders what to do there. Hillary Clinton, I mean, Donald Trump as well. I mean, these are far from specialists in foreign. They're not Richard Nixon. You know, they're not specialists in this area. They know a few slogans about it, and that's it. The press has been misreporting, lying, making stuff up about the Middle East for decades. And these people have the gall to look down their nose at him. These people have been absolutely criminal in their misrepresentation of facts. And they dare look down their nose at Johnson. For the first time, I think, and probably the last time, I'm with him on this. Who cares? none of them know anything about it. This is nothing special.
Well, and it just goes to show, you know, when it's talking about lies that the media has, the most recent supposed scandal against Bashar al-Assad is allegedly dropping chlorine gas that only killed one person in Syria, and they're blaming it on the Syrian regime. And I gotta say, I don't believe it for a couple different reasons. It's not just because I support Assad, of course. It's because they're winning. The coalition is winning, and the outcry that would come from dropping some chlorine gas on a target versus dropping explosives from a Russian jet doesn't make any military sense. It doesn't make any diplomatic sense. It doesn't make any sense within any sort of context. And of course, they've been saying this for years, and they backed off of it, blaming him for using chemical weapons, that the evidence is murky for the best side for the globalists, and it's just an outright lie based on a lot of the different things that are out there, both testimonials on the ground and reports and whatnot. So what do you think about Assad being accused of using chlorine gas?
I can't. It's really depressing to me that this is back in the news. Again, these are the same people that dare criticize Johnson for not knowing something about a city that they know nothing about. Why in heaven's name is Assad going to do this? Knowing full well that it will be plastered on every newspaper, he will be condemned the world over. There'll be outrage and attacks and God knows what else against him for this. It'll embolden his opponents. It'll increase recruits for his enemies. Why would he do this? And he's already allegedly done it and gotten into nothing but trouble for it. He does it again. And he's winning. I mean, they don't put any effort into this stuff. The last time they produced this, really, it was a handmade piece of junk that allegedly they had thrown into downtown Damascus, of all places. You're not in the middle of nowhere where his enemies are, but right, you know, near the palace. Just, you know, it had been made by rebels. They had used kind of makeshift weapons like this in the past. If the government was going to use chemical weapons, they have advanced methods to deliver it. Not this tin piece of metal that is something very similar to what the rebels had used in the past. So here again, you have it's ridiculous. And Johnson's Law, you know, I know it's very arrogant to name it after myself, but I see it all the time. The more obscure a country, the more that they can get away with. And not even that, but the more that even without deliberately lying, just they don't know anything. So who knows who they're going to believe and what they're going to say. And even worse than that, there's no one to correct them. A handful of nuts like us, maybe, that really, really no one in the system to correct them. So they can say whatever the heck they want. And I guess they do.
I mean, and, you know, it's an issue where, you know, we talk about the Second World War and stuff like that. I was actually just reading a book, not to jump too far back in time, but talking about from the Shoah Foundation with recorded testimonies from people. And, you know, of course, history books have said, and I've read them myself, especially when I was a school child, that places like Treblinka were nothing but death camps. The only reason they were there was to be a death camp. And I watched all these interviews with Jews who are elderly now, talking about how they got off the trains at Treblinka, and they waited around, and then they got on another train to go somewhere else. So on the same website, for instance, the same resource, of course, that's pro-Jewish, 100%, they can't even keep their stories straight on the things that they're accusing the enemies of globalism, of international Jewry. They can't even keep their stories straight. So it seems to me, in things like Syria, that this is just an example of they just can't absolutely keep their stories straight, and they just make up whatever they think will rile up the most amount of people.
Yeah, they don't care either way. Yeah, they have no particular emotional investment in an obscure place. So in that area, they'll listen to what the CIA says, or Capitol says, or the oil companies say, and you know, they could earn favors in some other area. Syria is very important to the regime, you know, to oil firms, natural gas, you know, that's very important, very strategic place. But to your average reporter, you know, he's willing to trade that for far more important things at home. So they have no particular emotional connections to it.
Right. Well, so how do you see things going on the ground in Syria? Of course, the Syrian Arab Army making huge advances, pretty much all over the place. The rebels have had to admit that in Aleppo they've had to fall back to secondary and in some place their third rung defenses. So things seem to be going pretty well for Bashar al-Assad. Where do you currently see things on the ground, militarily and geopolitically?
Well, I used to read the Russian language intelligence reports every day coming in. I've been lazy on that recently. They got kind of boring after a while. I've made the prediction that the war is over like 5 times now. So I don't want to, you know, it seems that the legitimate government in Damascus is kind of mopping up near the Turkish border and places like that. And every time I say that, there's this new advance. And it begs the question as to whatever the opposite, whether it be ISIS or whoever it is, their intelligence, their weaponry, their clear military competence, their stream of money, spare parts, ammunition, food and supplies, all way first class, just as good or better than the government itself. That could never happen unless there's cooperation of all the major governments in the area, and the full cooperation of the Central Intelligence Agency and Mossad. You know, there's the theory coming out of Damascus right now that this is not a civil war. This is a foreign invasion using proxies.
And they dress it up in the language of reformers and democracy and everything to the people here in the West. And at the same time, you have the media outlets who are doing their jihadi recruiting videos to get American Muslims, European Muslims, African Muslims, Chechens, all sorts of different people to come and fight for the establishment of a caliphate. So the idea of the war against Syria is the globalists and their media outlets and the governments seem to just be supporting whatever the people in that region are going to want to hear. But the only end result of all these things, if they were to be victorious, is a defeat of the Assad regime, which would end up, of course, opening up Syria to become another Libya.
Which may be of interest to the oil companies, at least in the sense that they can manipulate the various factions that'll come to power. That's a dangerous game. But I think it's easier for them than to deal with a very strong nationalist figure like the Assad family. What I'm seeing now is now that Turkey has gone over to the Russian side, which yet again, this is now the third flip-flop of that regime over there. And you know, he threatened to leave NATO again. He was doing that 5 years ago. And so now, so it looks like that the Turkish, that spigot has now been turned off. That's been the biggest change. China's continual threats against the U.S. to stop pushing Russia, to stop interfering in these areas. There's always these rumors that they're sending 1 billion troops over there. They're always false. I don't know why they continue to get recycled. It excites people, I guess. But these are new factors and the U.S. keeps getting weaker and weaker. And especially with Hillary Clinton, she may be installed in power. The more this is going on, I think they will just install her, knowing that our people probably won't do anything. But on the other hand, her people might. So this is, you know, I've been predicting that this war is over, and I've been wrong. But my intelligence was good. They all kept saying that, you know, it's over. Where are these guys getting these billions of dollars that it requires to run a full-scale army and fighting a major power or a major regional power to a standstill? That's the big issue that no major journalist is asking right now, at least in the West.
Well, and they're continually being pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. So you would think at some point that they would crack if it wasn't for the fact, as you said, I mean, it's not just a spigot, it's a fire hose of fighters that are going over there from the West that, of course, the Western countries don't do anything really to stop the radicalization of their young Muslims and allowing them to immigrate out of the country and all of the money, because it's not just a military. I mean, they've got so many people under ISIS control. They're running hospitals. They're running a postal service. They're running all the things of a government within that region. So that takes an abundant amount of money. And with the dip in oil prices, as that really being one of the only things that they could have made money on by capturing oil wells that were formerly controlled by the Syrian government, the only way they could be keeping food in these people's bellies, and keeping, the fighters being paid and things like that, is through international support. And I don't even think that's a question anymore of just how corrupt the West is.
I think it's impossible to deny at this point when ISIS has a fleet of oil tankers, which still blows my mind. How's that even possible? You know, it's like the IRA announcing that they have they had 10,000 tanks to get sent against London. I mean, that's pretty much the same kind of announcement. They have a fleet of oil tankers and everything and the whole infrastructure. Under spy satellite and under CIA control, there's no way that the other side can argue that this is anything but an international coalition invasion against Syria. The pattern is the same, whether it be Libya, Iraq, Iran, these countries, and Syria today. These are nations that were on the cusp of first world status. I've said this a million times. These were authoritarian government, but popular governments. Representative governments, secular, national socialists or social nationalists, generally speaking, most of them were and even considered themselves that without using the phrase in almost every respect, that were on the verge of, that were developing very rapidly, had a strong sense of social egalitarianism like Gaddafi had. And just, you know, if they made that jump to first world status, Israel's in serious trouble. The whole balance of power over there is in serious trouble. And that's where these things came from. And, And so my prediction here now is that all of a sudden there's going to be spontaneous protests and riots and God knows what kind of bombings in Turkey to punish him for this second defection to the other side.
Well, and it just goes to show that all of these politics are based around generally the international Zionist coalition and what they're trying to do to be able to maintain their own power around the world. Now, of course, Russia is playing a huge part of what's going on in supporting Bashar al-Assad and supporting nationalists in the Middle East and pretty much everywhere else around the world. So what do you think in regards to an article that came out that you and I were discussing prior to the show, talking about Putin and leadership changes within the Russian government, of which a lot of the people, they're still the loyal hardliners that have been with him for a very long time, who are still in proper positions, doing good jobs. But this new generation isn't being culled from the old communists. It's these younger nationalists that have been loyal to Putin, the United Russia Party, and of course loyal to Russia, that are being put up. And the media is saying, well, this means Putin's going to stay in power forever, and all these sorts of other over the top things. But what do you think about that article and how Putin is handling bringing Russia again continually rebuilding from the fall of the Soviet Union into being a true nationalist power and a superpower once again when it comes to the system of governance?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're a superpower now, especially with the alliance with China. The two together are certainly stronger than the U.S. You notice one thing that this new generation has in common is they're a lot like him. None of these people are flashy, loudmouth, in-your-face Jerry Springer types. They're all very, very collected, educated, moderate in the best sense of the word. They're not loose cannons. They're very much like Putin himself. He played his cards very close to the vest early on. Did a double. Essentially turned on his initial financiers, the oligarchs, who made a big mistake in putting money on him. That's the kind of attitude that he wants to see continue. He's and this is the same group of people, the same attitude that's beaten the West over and over again. They're simply being outsmarted and outclassed. The succession to Putin has been a huge problem. And it occurred to me again with this, I don't know if it was assassination attempt or not, with this head-on collision with Putin's, one of his chauffeurs and bodyguards. I'm sure they're foiling assassination attempts all the time. This one was kind of crude, kind of like a Diana, Lady Diana kind of thing. But it forced me to think, you know, who is the successor? And no one jumped to mind, which is odd. But that's exactly the point. These are technocratic, intelligent, educated people, not brash, dominating types. These are people more like Putin himself, to continue this counter-revolution. The time for that kind of brash rhetoric is gone. He just has continued to rebuild. This is a war of attrition with the West now, and I think what he's doing is right. These people are really not household names in the West, which is a very good thing. And let the pundits try to figure out who these people are.
Well, and if you just go to see, of course, the West is doing everything they can, supporting fifth columns within Russian politics, as we've seen that the Putin government has had to kick out a huge number of NGOs and so-called pastors. And we've talked about that in the show before, about how I've seen on so many conservative news outlets that are usually very pro-Zionist, that Russia has criminalized Christianity and all sorts of things like that, because these NGOs, many of them tied to George Soros and to other Western Jewish oligarchs, are using the front of religion to try and destabilize the political, spiritual, and economic outlook of Russia. This is something that they've done for a very long time. You know, they're working to undermine the solid institutions to promote their own agenda. So do you see that as something that Putin is handling properly with removing these NGOs, kicking Soros out and things like that? Do you think that's going to be able to stop that flood of subversion with that's being backed by the West being sent into Russia?
Yeah, and every time he does it, he gets more and more popular. It shows you how these, you know, Zionist conservative activist groups tie in very closely with elite power in Washington and New York. Because these NGOs, every last one, is either, in fact, CIA front, or more commonly, a front for corporate capital. All you got to do is look these people up on the web and see where their donation money is coming from. All this stuff, they're mostly tax exempt, so they have to make this public. And it's nothing but corporate name. So this is how private capital is actually taking on a political tone. Putin is aware of this from the inside and knows exactly how to stop it. The law, and I've it's died down recently, but this, he's banning Christianity. I mean, this is the level of, you know, these are people who are publishing journals out there saying this kind of garbage. And what he really did, what he understood, this is one column, as you mentioned, that the West is using to infiltrate Russia. And that is, the two groups are targeted, namely Islamic extremists from Saudi Arabia and Zionist Protestants from America. And the law is targeted against those groups that receive the majority of their funding from abroad, that aren't really Russian, that are getting. And it used to be in the 90s, these weirdo groups were building churches with onion domes and even icons, pretending to be Orthodox, bringing Russians in, and then once they're comfortable, pushing the agenda on them. These people are not honest, they're not decent people. The NGOs are nothing more than ideological attack dogs of the West and corporate capital. And every time, you know, Putin would hang these people, he'd be the most popular man in the world. But he's not, he doesn't operate that way. And his staying power is because of how he's concerned with building slowly but surely rather than making these grand ideological gestures.
Now, speaking of building, I think it's an important thing, of course, with Bashar al-Assad very solidly in power, and of course the advances being made there. Iran with the Iranian deal getting their $2 billion back, and things opening up a little bit, especially with Europe and things like that. And of course Russia, they've been hurt by the downturn in the price of oil a great deal. But by 2020, I was reading that they're going to have enough organic produce and meat produced within Russia to be able to feed the entire Russian people. So for the first time in a very long time, Russia will be food independent. And a lot of the investment that's being made in infrastructure. Where do you see over the next 4 years, let's say 5 years, we'll talk about a 5-year plan, these developments to make Russia more self-sufficient and thus less open to attacks by outside forces. What programs, other than the ones I mentioned, do you know that are being implemented by the Putin government, and how's their effectiveness?
Well, one of the big ones, and you mentioned that, you know, the sanctions were the best thing that's ever happened to Russia. It destroyed a lot of the residual support for the West that existed in the country, and it's forcing Russia to do what South Africa did in the 70s and 80s. They have to turn inward and use only their own domestic or Chinese capital to rebuild. One of the big areas, to answer your question, is banking. Putin and his friends are at war with the privately owned central bank in Moscow. It will be nationalized. It will be controlled by the state. But Putin knows he's going up against the most powerful people in the world here. He has his people all over the place. It's very hard, and monetary policy has kind of gone his way. But it may get worse as time goes on. Banking system will be nationalized. A lot of it is already nationalized. And what he's doing in terms of recasting the ruble and joining it with the Chinese currency to de-dollarize the world economy, this is really because the sanctions have pushed this agenda up years. Had sanctions not been there, it would have taken much longer. So the West is so crude and ignorant, they don't realize it's actually helped them and made Putin even more popular, and then drove China and Russia closer together.
Well, and that seems to be the Western way of doing things, of course, of meddling and not realizing what they're going to do. Do you see Russia being able, I almost said President Trump, but Donald Trump, of course, the Republican nominee, has actually been talking about the possibility of recognizing Crimea as part of Russia. That's huge to me. I've never imagined I would hear that from a Republican or a Democrat. What impact do you think that's going to have if he is elected on U.S.-Russian relations?
Well, Putin has all but endorsed the guy. Hillary Clinton has done everything in her power. I mean, she's now accusing Russia of interfering in American elections, which is kind of a way to cover over how the left has been intimidating Trump voters and shutting down Trump rallies, which is so – I mean, people don't realize how illegal that is for the Republican nominee. You can't shut his stuff – you could protest, but you can't shut his stuff down and use violence. That's a severe felony at this late in the game. So covering over for that – Hillary Clinton is now claiming that Russia is engaged in a all-out war on the American electoral system. This is one out of a million claims, and she's also covering over her own usurpation against Bernie Sanders a few months ago. So this is, you know, that's the direction that they're going in. Recognizing something like the Crimea, which of course is a fait accompli anyway, that will put Russians at ease, and it will make Russia much easier to deal with. But Hillary Clinton is elected, unless things could happen from within, whether it be in the military or intelligence community or in Russia herself, there is the regime is wants war with Russia, and they will say and do anything to make it happen. And if a false flag happens, I bet you it's going to be very crude and obvious. You know, they'll find a passport on top of a burning heap of lava, you know, in perfect condition, you know, pointing to some intelligence operative, you know, something stupid like that, and people will buy it, and journalists will buy it. So Trump, I mean, the man has got to get elected because World War III is a very real possibility with Hillary Clinton and her rhetoric. The only solace I might have is that maybe she's using that rhetoric just to mollify bankers and energy cartels for now. When she's elected, she'll calm down. I don't know. That's the only thing I have to kind of mollify. This is campaign rhetoric. She's not really talking to the American people. She's talking to elites in making these accusations.
Well, and it's the sort of thing that could be as simple, of course, because we have advisors. I mean, so much to me reminds me of what I've read about the lead up to the escalation of the Vietnam War, with the Gulf of Tonkin incident, of course, being the United States government completely fabricated an attack on an American vessel to justify ramping things up, but having advisors on the ground who were soldiers, many of them Green Berets or other special forces who were engaged in fighting alongside the South Vietnamese forces before we were officially at war, getting killed, and that ramps up that they're killing our advisors. It could be something as simple as American soldiers getting killed where they weren't even supposed to be in the first place, according to what the laws of our country are and what we're told as the American people in Russia, alongside their ISIS cohorts and whatnot. You know, and then Russia's bombing America. You know, we must defend America. It's the sort of thing that could so quickly happen and so quickly escalate based on the lies that are told to the American people. And I think that goes back to the beginning of our show with how much we're just lied to. They assume we're so stupid. But I just remember, I've talked about it before, but when Libya was going on, before we were officially involved, I was talking to one of my buddies, and there were all these artillery strikes and stuff that were just laser dot precision on Libyan military targets. And I said, we've got guys on the ground there. They have to be guiding that. There's no way these rebels could do this. And of course, it turned out to be true. So the American involvement with trying to destabilize regimes, do regime changes, and then justify military action has been done before in American history. Do you see this as just a continuation of warmongering imperialist policies by the Jewish-controlled Washington establishment?
Precisely. I mean, I couldn't have put it better myself. I can picture the TV spot now. There's a mangled American soldier, innocently in Ukraine, and then there's very dire, you know, pompous music in the background, and then it fades to black, and then you have Putin slowly come up on the screen, and Americans are supposed to run away screaming. I can picture it. I can see how they're going to do it, and it only takes one mangled body, and I could picture it. I'm just hoping that right now, America is in no position to fight anyone. You know, America says it doesn't have the money, the manpower, the will. I've said this 100 times too. You know, she's going to, I know, and we've talked about it the last time, how many fighter jets are not serviceable right now? How many destroyers are not serviceable right now? And Russia and China are doing just the opposite. And there's so much corruption. How many trillions are missing from the Pentagon? It never ends. I mean, there's no morale there. It'll be a miracle for the U.S. to do much of anything against the East in this respect.
Well, and to close out our show, I just wanted to talk about, I just have spent the last day just absolutely cackling to myself like a loon, because the I think it was one of the fifth largest Jewish outlets in the world, I think the largest newspaper in America, said that, you know, with the 88 generals and admirals endorsing Trump, we kind of talked about it yesterday, but this is a news story that's actually like gotten traction, saying that Donald Trump is silently signaling to white nationalists, because of course 88 can stand for the 88 precepts from Mein Kampf, or HH for Heil Hitler. They're saying that Donald Trump has given a wink and a nudge to the alt-right and to nationalists. And this wasn't just one story. This is actually, now I've seen it posted on dozens of news outlets. They're truly psychotic, Dr. Johnson. So as we close out the final thought, what do you think about the fact that, that something that I would have thought would have been a joke one of us did to parody, these Jews, but their media outlets are actually continuing to run into day two of a story that the number of generals and admirals who endorse Trump is secretly he's a Nazi. What do you think on that as we close out?
I stared blankly at the screen when I saw that. I thought maybe it was you and this was like a joke news story. No, these are mainstream newspapers and news outlets doing this. I mean, does this sound like a secure, confident, legitimate system to you? I mean, it sounds like a system barely hanging on. I saying it's a great time to be alive, I say it again.
Well, you know, when you're that paranoid, where you're looking for national socialists and looking for nationalists of all different stripes behind every blade of grass, it just goes to show that you're worried about something. If you're in control, they wouldn't be running with that as an actual news story to attempt to influence the American election. But that means it's current year, and it's the best current year ever. So, Dr. Johnson, as we come to the end of our show, as always, thank you so much for being here. To my listeners, I'm going to be here with Matt Parrott tomorrow to finish out the week. And I really appreciate all you guys being here, as always. Thanks to Sven for all the work he does on the tech side. And Dr. Johnson, as always, amazing to have you here. So thank you guys so much. Thank you for the best current year ever. And I'll look forward to seeing you guys tomorrow. Hail victory.
You've been tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioArea.com.